Thank you for that great background information, Marshall. This is so exciting to be talking about this finally, because for so long we haven't been able to do much with Part D. And so I just want to give you the rundown of what's, you know, just to summarize in a nutshell what's currently available and then what's on the horizon. And Barb will go into much more detail about the contents of these different files that are on the horizon. So right now, today, researchers can obtain the Part D denominator file that Marshall described, and then what we call a Part D Phase 1 utilization file that has a small number of the PDE variables, some of the utilization variables, and then also a small number of first data bank variables that Marshall described that talk about what is the drug, what is the form, what is the dosage from first data bank. That's a standalone file that really can't be linked to any of the characteristics files we're going to talk about in a little bit. It has a streamlined process for review at CMS. Now, what a lot of the more heavy-duty drug researchers would want is really more of the variables from the PDE file itself. That's, you get more cost variables, more information about what's happening during that transaction. You have a lot more options with the full PDE file to select what you really would like. And then, as Marshall mentioned, coming up very soon, we'll have benefit phase information, drug tier, plan characteristics, and actually that's a series of four files that come together in a package to tell you more than most people would ever want to know about the different plans. So you can know for a beneficiary what does their benefit look like in pretty great detail. And then in the future, we'll be developing a pharmacy lookup table so you can know if a pharmacy is part of a chain and what type of a pharmacy it is. And then also prescriber characteristics so we can know more about the type of provider who is prescribing the drug for the beneficiary. What's interesting about this is CMS has never distributed any sort of cross-reference or lookup tables with Medicare Part A data or Part B data. They've left that up to the researchers to buy those databases themselves and link them if they have an interest. For Part D, for the first time, they've asked us to make that possible for researchers. Part of it is because there's so much sensitivity around releasing any information about the Part D plans. They really don't want people going after prescribers to try to market more products to them. So there's an extra layer of protection. Because of that, we still want researchers to know what they need to know about what the pharmacies look like, what the prescribers look like, what the plans, without telling you who they are. So we're delivering these characteristics files. Everything that I'm going to talk about is something that researchers could do with the files that we're making available. So this first slide talks about Part D enrollment. This uses the Part D denominator file. And you can see from the very first line, it includes everybody who's Medicare enrolled, whether they're buying into the D benefit or not. So this is really a great source of denominator information. You can see that about 54% enrolled in Part D the first year it was offered in 2006. The number's increasing a little bit. We think in 2007 it's a little bit higher as well. So here also you get different ways of looking at a denominator. You get a pretty different answer if you look at the number of beneficiaries with at least 1 month of Part D coverage. That's what the first number is. And then if you look at member years of enrollment, a little bit lower. So especially in 2006, people could have enrolled late without being dinged in terms of having creditable coverage. CMS gave them until May to enroll. So you see a lot lower number of person years of enrollment compared to people with a month, at least 1 month. Plan types, Marshall already explained that there are two different flavors, Medicare Advantage, Part D, or prescription drug plans. In this denominator file, there's actually quite a bit more granularity in terms of what is the type of a plan. Medicare Advantage could have a local plan or a regional plan. And if you're really interested in what is the service area for the plan, you can get the plan characteristics files, and there's a service area component of that. Now, this is an interesting slide, too, because there are so many variations. These slides are posted to the APHA website, and I apologize, I completely forgot to bring handouts, even though we talked about that. So I do apologize, but these numbers are available for download. So what's interesting here is we talked about people maybe having subsidized coverage This is the cost share field that Marshall talked about. So it's not just if you're a Medicaid dual eligible beneficiary, but there are premium subsidies and copay subsidies available for low income older adults as part of the Part D benefit. And so in the denominator file, you can know that a beneficiary was eligible and received some of these subsidies. And what that means is that their benefit is a little bit different. For example, depending on the level of low income subsidy they have, they might not have paid a deductible, they might have a different type of gap coverage. The benefit is different than the standard benefit for a Medicare beneficiary. They have a lot of different options there. So you know also who's paying it if you're in the gap. The lists don't pay, just like the dual eligibles don't. Now, there are a lot of people who are included in this database who aren't technically receiving the Medicare Part D benefit. Marshall mentioned that there are retiree drug subsidies where a lot of retiree plans could buy into the D benefit and get a subsidy, but it's a better benefit than the Medicare B benefit. So we don't have some of the very specific plan benefit information for these types of plans. They're not required to follow the CMS rules for all of the formulary and tier requirements. So we won't see some of these represented in the plan characteristics files because they don't have to follow the standard contracting for the rest of the Part D benefit. So who chooses to enroll in Part D or who's automatically enrolled in Part D, as Marshall pointed out, since the dual eligibles are? You can see that there are a fair number of people enrolled who are less than 65 years old, and part of that is because of the idea of creditable coverage. We have VA data in here, Department of Defense, federal employee health benefits, this sort of thing, so we think that's probably why we have so many of the younger folks in here. For the Medicare, it generally is the disabled and the dual eligible Medicare, Medicaid, who we see who are younger than 65. A little bit of racial difference, I think, in terms of who's de-enrolled and who's not. And all of this is just looking at the denominator file. This slide is a little variation on the one we just saw. It just looks at who's enrolled in the managed care Part D benefit versus prescription drug plan benefit. And you can see a lot more enrolled in the standalone PDP. And again, we see a little bit of variation here. Part of why we're showing some of this is because if there's a specific type of a population you're interested in studying, you get minimum data necessary in terms of which variables you want, but also in terms of the count. So for example, if you're mostly interested in Hispanics, you could request just that cohort, and that would save quite a bit of money compared to getting everybody. So we do like people to be as specific as possible when you make your data request. All right, and in this next slide, we're starting to link the PDE data to the denominator data. So again, it shows member years of enrollment, and then we start looking at the total number of prescription drug events, PDEs. And it's a very large number of Part D events, prescription drug fills dispensed during the course of a year. Lots of different things you can do with this data. So we're showing you some examples of some things you can do with the PDE files. One thing that we like to do here is look at what are the drugs. Is it lots of different drugs or is it the same drugs? And we do that with the NDC, the National Drug Code. So even though we have a lot more drugs dispensed in the PDP, prescription drug plans, it's actually a smaller number of different drug codes than we see in the MAPD, which I thought was kind of interesting. In terms of gross drug costs, and for cost of prescriptions, you could choose to look at lots of different things. You could look at what does the beneficiary pay, what does the program pay. So here, just looking at gross drug costs, that's $61.7 billion, with a B, in 2007. We wanted to get some sort of idea about beneficiary level utilization. So we looked at the average annual number of prescription fills per beneficiary. And again, using two different denominators, one uses beneficiaries enrolled at least 1 month as a denominator, and another looks at person years of enrollment. And depending on which you use, you get really, you know, what could be a pretty meaningful difference in results there. But is it lots of different drugs that they're getting, or is it the same drug over and over? So average number of unique drugs per beneficiary. And this is the full drug code. So even a change, slight change in packaging would show up as a different NDC the way we looked at it. So you'll want to be, you know, as specific or as general as you want to be when you define that. And that actually comes out exactly as it is on the PDE. That's not an encrypted field. So if you have other lookup databases you want to use for that NDC code, you can. And then we looked at average cost per beneficiary, and that's looking at total gross cost, not just what the beneficiary pays. But that's a pretty high average. Interesting there, too, to look at the difference between MAPD and PDP there. So all of this is without any extra characteristics files. So over here, we wanted to get into who's using the benefit, and are they just a few high-volume users, or a little bit more description about how, on average, how many drugs per month are beneficiaries getting. And you can see that about 9% of enrollees aren't using the benefit at all. They have no fills whatsoever during the year. But there are a handful here that are using 5 to 10 drugs a month, and then a smaller percentage that are using even more. Then we wanted to see, for those who are using the benefit, are they having lots of different people prescribing drugs? Are they going to lots of different pharmacies? We found that that wasn't so much the case. Now here, we just used the PDE file. But if you wanted to know more about a prescribing provider, in the spring there will be a lookup table that will tell you the specialty, you know, what is the type of provider who's prescribing it right now. We don't know that. You just know that the identifier they used on one PDE was different than the identifier on another. Now, what's tricky about these fields is providers have options about what they put on that prescription. They could use an NPI, the National Provider Identification Number. They could use a DEA number. And so right now, even if that's the same provider, we can't disentangle that. We need a lookup table to do that. So when we start delivering that, we'll have that all reconciled for you. Same with pharmacy. Some pharmacies are actually part of the same parent organization. They have a relationship, you know, with CVS, no matter where you go. But they have actually different NCPDP IDs. So this, right from the PDE file, counts any change in an NCPDP ID. So here we're overestimating the number of different pharmacies. Some of them actually use the linked data file. You know, it's part of CVS or it's part of OSCO. So we don't have that in here. In the spring, when we have the pharmacy lookup table, you'll be able to do that. So just to kind of compare, now that we have 2 years of data available, and as Marshall mentioned, by next summer we'll have 2008 data available, you can see that we're getting more and more people enrolled in the drug program. They're getting to be a lot more Part D events, even more fills per beneficiary as the years go on. So it looks like this just continues to grow. I think this is kind of a fun one. So if you have either the first data bank lookup variables that we have that you can order with the Part D data, you can know what is the drug. Or you could link the NDC to your own lookup data table. But this is kind of interesting. So this just looks at frequency of what is being filled. What is the drug? So some of you who are pharmacists might be completely not at all surprised by this, but I think it's a very interesting slide. And then the next way we can look at this is in terms of cost. So again, very similar, but some new drugs move in here just because they're much more costly than some of the high volume drugs we were seeing on the prior slide. So with this data that's available in researcher identifiable files right now, this is not a special characteristics file, this is just the first data bank lookup table that you can order with this, you can know an awful lot about what's happening with these Medicare beneficiaries. Marshall mentioned that something that we're working on, people are working on today as we speak, they're probably still in the office working on this, is we're preparing to roll out a whole new series of files, benefit phases for these Part D events. There are so many different proprietary CMS data files that plans submit that talk about how their benefit is structured. There is no way that CMS would agree to release that to the public. But Spike worked hard lobbying them so that we could have as much of that information for researchers as possible. So here's what we came up with. For every PDE, we can have access to lookup tables in the background that tell us, according to that plan's formulary, where did this drug fall in terms of the benefit phase for that beneficiary? So we've gone through all of the PDEs and summed all of the deductibles, the initial coverage limits, the gaps, the catastrophic. We've added up several different fields and figured out, according to each beneficiary's plan that they're enrolled in, where did this PDE fall, what phase of the benefit. So I think that's a great variable that researchers could ask for if it's something you're interested in. This is where, you know, we were talking about how the catastrophic phase, Medicare provides reinsurance, and a lot of people do reach that coverage gap, what used to be known as the donut hole. It's called, you pass the initial coverage limit and you've gone into the ICL, initial coverage limit. But the thing is, if you have a subsidy, if you're a low-income subsidy beneficiary, it doesn't affect you any differently. You don't pay any extra. It's a subsidized situation. And so what this slide shows is both the number of the percentage of beneficiaries who reach that phase of the benefit, but it disentangles who has to pay more because they've reached that phase from who personally is not paying for it. It's subsidized. So a lot of the people who reach that coverage gap aren't exposed to any different payment because they've reached that phase. And this is looking at it for the next, you know, the top level of the phase, the catastrophic coverage level. You can see that almost everybody, you know, first of all, only about 8 or 9% reach that very, very high level of drug spending at any point during the year, which is good news. But most who reach it aren't paying out of their pocket for it. I want to spend just a couple of minutes just putting this in a broader context of data. Marshall mentioned before the chronic condition data warehouse. That is, chronic condition data warehouse lives at Buccaneer now, and that's where I work. And it started really as a Medicare A, B database. So this Part D data lives in a context where if you have a research need for it, you could get those fee-for-service A and B claims. So I just want to make sure you're recalling that. One of the nice features of the chronic condition database is that some very common conditions for older adults, many of which are not chronic, are pre-coded in there. So if you're interested in studying patients with AMI and what drugs they get, you could easily request that cohort. Marshall mentioned patients with diabetes don't seem to be getting some of the diabetic medications you would hope. Well, he requested a diabetes cohort and then look to see what drugs they're getting. So that's just, I think, a nice way sometimes to approach drug studies. Wanted to make sure that you're aware of the Chronic Condition Data Warehouse website. We do post some statistics out there, just summary tables. Sometimes we have some good documentation out there. If you're requesting data, you go to the ResDoc site first, but there's just sometimes a few other little tidbits on our website. Here I just wanted to talk about how common some of these conditions are. If you look at the point prevalence in the Medicare fee-for-service data, I just pulled a few common conditions that really, most of which have some good Part D medications for, not all. But you can see the size of a diabetes cohort, almost 25% of people in the Part B fee-for-service have diabetes. And so, anyway, some good cohorts to study. As Marshall mentioned, we have all of the Part D data for everybody enrolled in Part D, whether it's Medicare Advantage or standalone PDP, but what we don't have is the Medicare A and B. And so this slide just kind of shows that if you're interested in a certain disease cohort, would you have enough who have Part D coverage to have a meaningful sample size? And it looks like for some of these more common conditions, you certainly would. And then this shows for people with certain conditions, where are we seeing lots of drug use and maybe expensive drug use? And so a few things really stand out here. You can see for diabetes, we have a huge volume of PDEs for people with diabetes. About 41% of all the PDEs for people for whom we have Medicare A and B data. And that accounts for almost 40% of the PDE costs that we see during the year or go to these people. Now, they might have other conditions also. It's not saying that all of that goes to treating diabetes. Some of these people have end-stage renal disease, chronic kidney disease, cardiovascular disease. But lots of good data options. And I guess we'll wait for questions. We're a little